Chapter 12. The Descent into Abuse. Summer and Fall, 2003. Colonel Joe Anderson, the energetic commander of the brigade of the 101st Airborne that was headquartered in Mosul, was told one evening late in 2003 by his intelligence officer that soldiers at their detention center had reported that one of their Iraqi prisoners had a broken jaw. As such incidents go, it was routine, similar to dozens of others that occurred across Iraq during the first phase of the American occupation. Yet a warning bell went off in Anderson's head. "I was suspicious," he said later. "When people fall down, they sustain a broken nose or a cut chin, but jawbones are broken by a blow. They said he fell." What's more, news of the incident came just after the 101st had suffered its worst month ever of casualties while in Iraq, losing 25 soldiers in November. And Anderson knew his soldiers wanted payback. "Guys get pissed when they see their buddies blown away," he said. He understood the emotions, but felt strongly that it shouldn't be expressed through illegal or immoral acts. He ordered an informal inquiry, which soon turned into a formal investigation. On December 19, the investigation board concluded that the injury was caused either by the Iraqi being struck or caused to fall. In either case, the harm was the result of intentional acts by coalition forces. The soldier directly involved was issued a letter of reprimand, but that was the least of the consequences. The investigation had uncovered a host of other problems. "The detainees were being systematically and intentionally mistreated," one investigator wrote. "I saw the chief throw them down, put his knee in his neck and back, and grind them into the floor," one witness stated. "He would use a bullhorn and yell at them in Arabic and play heavy metal music extremely loud. They got so scared they would urinate on themselves. He was very aggressive and rough with detainees." Prisoners were also made to exercise until they couldn't stand, and then were doused in cold water. Some were made to wear sandbags on their heads, on which were written IED, signifying to soldiers, incorrectly in most cases it appears, that their wearer had been caught trying to bomb U.S. troops. Most important, investigators reported, the brigade detention center was being run by a military intelligence battalion untrained for the job. They knew how to interrogate prisoners, not how to guard and house them. Anderson and his commander, Petraeus, reacted with alacrity. Control of the detention facility was transferred almost instantly from the military intelligence battalion to a military police unit that knew how to manage prisoners, Anderson said. Latrines were moved closer to the holding area to minimize the chances that prisoners would trip while being escorted. Fences were erected so detainees could move outside the building while still being controlled. Floodlights were installed. Also, the word went out across the division that abuse wouldn't be tolerated. "Tone is very important," Petraeus said much later. "People say this is a squad leader's war, but what generals can do is set tone." In addition, to ensure a layer of oversight, Petraeus reached out to the Red Cross and to local religious, political, and civic leaders, inviting them to inspect the 101st's detention facilities often, to talk to prisoners, and to bring any problems to his attention. In the next 2 months, there was only one case of possible abuse detected, Anderson noted, and that was an ambiguous situation. In his view, the quick reaction to the broken jaw incident was characteristic of the division's style. "We were constantly assessing our operations. Were we doing it right? Going after the right people? Having the effects we wanted to have," Anderson said. Dealing with detainees was just part of this.